Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. The impact of the pandemic is hard to grasp. There are more than 400,000 Americans dead and millions infected. It's upended our economy, put millions of people out of work, and caused significant economic hardship for individuals and families. It's changed how we work, how we learn, and how we socialize. The pandemic has also forced us to innovate. Today, we discuss how the pandemic has impacted the arts in our region and some of the creative ways artists and art organizations are reaching audiences. Later in the hour, we talk with the executive director of The Yard on Martha's Vineyard and Christopher Edwards, artistic director at Eventide Theater in Dennis. But first, we welcome John Thomas to the program. John is a pianist and composer and host of Music Without Borders, a concert series underway through March in collaboration with the Provincetown Theater. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mindy. Thank you for having me.
The Music Without Borders concert series has been described as a boundary-free journey from classical to gospel to original to improvisation to countries near and far, complete with musical guests. So tell us about the genesis of the World Musical Tour and your collaboration with the Provincetown Theater to get it to audiences.
Well, I've worked with the Provincetown Theater for many years. 2019, we had a wonderful performance of Sweeney Todd. And then I went off to Bulgaria on a Fulbright grant to study music and perform. That got cut short with the pandemic, and I found myself back here. But I wanted to continue the music I was creating, which was working with other musicians to create border-free music. So I actually watched a wonderful video by Stefan Hauser, a Croatian cellist. He put out a thing called Alone Together in Pula late April, and it was 25 minutes of beautiful music with no talking, and it was just extremely emotionally cathartic to watch it, and that was the idea, to create something here that would bring all these different kinds of music together.
Each concert is a mix of your music and includes a guest musician. What influenced your choice of guests?
Well, the people that I worked with were people I've worked with before in Provincetown in the Cape Cod area. And, you know, there are many great musicians who have one niche and one genre. That's what they do. And then there's other musicians that you just get a sense, you know, that they're good for anything. Mm-hmm. For example, Justin Torellis is a multi-talented reed player, and not only did he want to do an improvisation, but he brought an Astor Piazzolla piece, Oblivion, and I brought him a piece from a Turkish Mevlevi Sufi ceremony. So when you have musicians like that, or Ken Field, or Moselle, and other people, it's a very enriching experience, especially when you can basically do... You can create the music with a certain layout of the song, but you don't have to over-rehearse it because you really are speaking, you really are communicating through music. And I just love that. That's the highest natural high I can think of.
I was going to say, it sounds really exciting. So now, you said the concert series is a way for you to build on your experience in Bulgaria on the Fulbright Grant for Music. What resonated with you about Bulgarian music before you traveled there initially?
I'm a musician, and 1989 or so, I don't know if you probably recall, the Balkanton Record Company, which is the state-run Bulgarian company, licensed all the Bulgarian women's choirs recordings to American recording companies. And that was the era of CDs were big, and they were trying to figure out how can they get our money as consumers, so they invented world music. So there were like 80 different countries, so you could exhaust your savings by going from country to country. And when I hit Bulgaria, I'm like, what is this? I mean, I'm a musician. I didn't understand the rhythms. I didn't understand the harmonies, the melodies, or the language, and it was fascinating. And it kept me going for 10, 15, 20 years till I finally met a Bulgarian musician in Provincetown who started to teach me some of the more, you know, the rhythms in Bulgaria. There's a straight 2-4, of course, but most of it's odd rhythms, like 5, 7, 9, 11, 15. And then within that, there's sub-rhythms. So like a typical one is a 7-8, and that's usually dun, 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 da, 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 1-2-3, 1-2, 1-2. That's the slow version. If it's a fast dance called a rochenica, then it's yata da 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 da. There's 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 3. I mean, this goes on and on. It's endless, and I'm just scratching the surface.
All right, so let's hear some music. We have an excerpt from a piece titled Improvisation, and Ken Field is featured with you. Ken will be a guest on the February 28th concert. So tell us a little bit more about this piece and what we should be listening for.
This is an improvisation, and Justin Torellis and I also did an improvisation. So there's two improvisations in the 7-concert series, and it literally was that. We knew that we wanted to start, you know, I'm at the piano here in the theater as I talk to you. We wanted to start with the A minor chord, and that's all we had. and we just created it on the spot. He has a looper machine. He loves his looper. He likes to put sound in and layer on top and layer on top and layer on top. And we just did it, and you know, I think it was 7 minutes or something. When it drifted away, it was done.
Okay, so I recognize the piano, but what are the other instruments that we're hearing?
There was one alto saxophone that was layered several times. So all those, wow. That was one instrument, but he kept layering it into this looper. You lay down one track, and then he records that, and then he plays on top of that, and he's recording the second track and the third, and then he can manipulate the levels by his feet as he's playing.
Wow.
So it really was improvisation on every level.
It's wild. So is piano traditionally part of Bulgarian music?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The most traditional Bulgarian music is singing around a table years ago with women inside as they were doing things. The men were out in the fields, and that's why they learned to play like the loud gaita, the bagpipe. They typically send a kid out, like, go learn it yourself because it's loud, you know, and the women would do the singing. But that's changed a lot. You know, we've crossed the sexual identity in terms of music there. But it was the Philip Kutev music that was the kind of manufactured, romanticized choral music, but that's not really how it sounds. But it's beautiful, and it's part of the repertoire now. But the traditional instruments are the gaita, which is the bagpipe, the gadulka, which is like a violin of sorts that you stand up on your thigh and play. But it's interesting because it has four strings in front, and I think it's four. It has several strings in front and several strings in the back that you cannot get to or touch, but they resonate. Then you've got the kaval, which is basically a reed instrument. It's metal and wood. It's more akin to the Turkish ney or the Armenian duduk, but it's very bendy. It's beautiful sounds. And then you've got the tambura, which is kind of like a banjo of sorts. And then you've got the tupan, which is a drum. Those are the basic instruments. But, you know, the wedding bands in Bulgaria in the 1980s, when communism was losing its grip, started getting gigs, and they started adding electric instruments, electric guitar, drums, things like that. And so that's more typical in America to hear that kind of instrumentation. The people I play with here, they use a bass guitar, electric guitar. Sometimes we have an accordion or saxophone. And then the piano is interesting because it's not an instrument at all. It's part of the Bulgarian repertoire, although Pancho Vladigerov, the great composer, he was a master of composing for piano. So there's great piano repertoire, but that's what we would call classical music. And it's usually using Bulgarian folk themes from villages that create these incredible symphonies and concertos. So it's all kind of, you know what, within Bulgaria itself, it's music without borders in a sense. Because you've also got Bulgarian music, you've got music that's Turkish-based, you've got Roma-based music, you've got Armenian. There's some Sephardic Jewish sounds. You know, it's all Bulgaria is fascinating. I don't think I'll ever tire of it.
Let's hear another piece of music. This is an excerpt from Zoya's song. What can you tell us about this piece?
Well, we call it Zoya's song because my wonderful music ethnologist friend at the Plovdiv Academy of Music, Dance, and Fine Arts, where I was, she put, it's typical for academic people and musicians to go to their home village and collect 100 or 200 songs from elders and write about them and write them out and publish books. This is the way they're trying to keep the culture existing so it doesn't disappear. This is her favorite song. I asked her which one was her favorite. And it's very, it's almost never played. I can't even find any recordings of it. It's from her village of Milkovica on the border of Romania and Bulgaria near the Danube River. And it's got a Romanian title, but in Bulgarian it says, Zeleno listo, Pochernjalo zurno, which means green leaf, blackened grain, and of course it's a love song. This is my interpretation of it on piano. It's a new composition.
your Fulbright grant in Bulgaria, what were some of the most memorable musical moments? I'm imagining that last, you talk about that last dance in March, I'm sure is one of them, but what were some of the things that stand out to you?
Soon after I arrived there, in mid-September, there was the Plovdiv Academy of Music, which is sort of like the Juilliard of Bulgaria, is sitting on top of one of the remaining six hills of Plovdiv. There used to be seven, but apparently the communist regime knocked one of them down for something. I can't remember what. But the academy sits above an ancient amphitheater, first century AD, which was really used when the Roman Empire was in control of Plovdiv. And it was buried over the years, over the centuries. And there was an earthquake in the 1970s, and it popped up. It reemerged. And they found that it was completely preserved. So it's probably the premier, most spectacular place in all Bulgaria for concerts. Everything from symphonies to Bulgarian dancing, everything, rock, you know, popular groups from around the world. So I saw a dance festival there in early October for about 10 groups. It was wild, just wild. I mean, just, oh, I can't, that, a high point, definitely. And also, what can I think else? Just, you know, even going, there's a place called Bebop Cafe, just hearing different jazz combinations of things. And going to schools, there's a school in Široka Loka, and to hear the young people that are being trained to be musicians, it's just fascinating, you know. And there's another event that happened, I'll tell you about later, that I personally was involved in, which okay. was probably a high point of my life.
Yeah. How did your repertoire evolve during that time, and what Bulgarian composers or musicians influenced you the greatest?
Anton Vladigerov is the guy. He's like the greatest Bulgarian composer. I'm just enchanted with him. He was in Germany a lot, but he was Bulgarian, and he wrote symphonies, he wrote piano concertos, he wrote beautiful piano pieces that are just, he was a meticulous. This is about respecting the music. This guy knew exactly what he wanted. And if you add more notes, if like I typically do in other things, fake something or, you know, kind of play around with it, it's not the same. Mm. And so I really learned to really, really take the time. And there's a piece called Elegy of Autumn that I think I gave to you.
Yeah, that's I was going to ask you. That's what we're about to hear. Is there anything you want to tell us about it before we listen?
It's just, it's so lush. I mean, the guy, he's kind of like a combination of Brahms and Rachmaninoff, but I mean, that almost negates his vast talent. He's not Brahms or Rachmaninoff, but it's in that style. It's very accessible to our ears, but it has Bulgarian village themes woven into it. So Bulgarian people go, ah, that's that song. But it's not so jarring for us, you know? And it's just, there's other wonderful composers, but he's my favorite.
You put together the Music Without Borders concert series, and you used a framework of seven concerts for seven color chakras and seven music tones. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that was I was really fortunate. My friend Berta Walker had given me a book on color chakras, the seven chakras associated with each note of the scale. So red is associated with C. Orange is D, yellow is E, et cetera, up to B. And that was it. I thought, okay, that's it. So each one goes up, progresses one step up. It's very subtle what we do. We change the font of each concert. The first concert has red, second, there's no primer about it. You know, there's no like program notes, but it's kind of a behind the scenes thing. And I also start each concert with something in that key. So I finally had some, you know, a framework to put these musical clothes on. So that's, yeah. I'm grateful. I'm grateful we had it. You know, I was seven seas, seven mountains, seven continents. It wasn't clicking, you know.
The Music Without Borders concerts run every Sunday from now until March 7th. We'll post a link with complete rundowns of past and upcoming performances at our website, capeandislands.org. John, the final piece you have for us is a special one. You've mentioned it was 50 hours of practice for 12 minutes of music. Tell us more about preparing for this performance and why it is so special for you.
This is the concertino for piano and orchestra, but really it's the folk orchestra, those instruments we talked about, by Milcho Vasilev. He's one of the best composers, most respected in Bulgaria, and he's the rector of the academy. And he was retiring that in the first semester of 2019. He wrote this for his daughter, who's a professional pianist, and she is phenomenal. This has been her go-to piece for 20 years. It's been played by two or three other people, I think all women from Bulgaria. And I kind of got friendly with Vladimir Vladimirov, who's the the youngish conductor of the folk orchestra. He's very vibrant. He bounces. And he walked up to me one day and said, "Hey, I want you to try this concertino. Would you take a look at it?" And I had heard Maya play it. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'd recorded her on my iPhone. Thank God I did, because I had a 12-minute teaching module in my headphones for months. We went at it. And he said, "I want you to do it a little bit. Add a little American style. Keep it, you know, give it a little fresh eyes, fresh ears." And so I did. I literally put 50 hours in. There was one piece that I didn't quite nail. It's like 4 seconds. I think I put 5 hours into that.
Wow.
these rhythms are so crazy. You know, and I didn't. It was the high point of my life, because that was my dream, to go to Bulgaria and play piano with a whole orchestra.
John Thomas, pianist, composer, and host of Music Without Borders, a concert series currently underway through March in collaboration with the Provincetown Theater. John, thanks so much for taking time to share your music with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on the air, and it's always good to share Music Without Borders.
We go out on John Thomas performing concertino for piano and orchestra. Coming up after a break, we talk with Chloe Jones, Executive Director of The Yard. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing how the pandemic has impacted the arts in our region and some of the creative ways artists and art organizations are reaching audiences. With us now is Chloe Jones, Executive Director of The Yard on Martha's Vineyard. Welcome.
Hi, Mindy. Great to be with you.
Chloe, what has been the impact of the pandemic on The Yard this past year?
Yeah, you know, as with most other industries, the pandemic has been devastating for the dance and performing arts sector. In March of last year, alongside so many other organizations, we canceled the rest of our spring program, including our work in island schools, and we called off the 48th annual Yard Art Summer Season. So it was, you know, it was devastating. And as a small nonprofit without an endowment or reserves, we sort of went into immediate crisis management mode. I will say we've stayed on our feet and remained active, which is really, you know, the result of a great deal of hard work, painful decisions, emergency relief funding, and the support of our donors. We were able to pilot a few new initiatives and explore the virtual realm. But, you know, I will say that for as difficult as the pandemic has been, it has also opened many new doors. And I think The Yard is entering 2021 very much embracing the change and looking ahead with tremendous hope. Mm. And, you know, I think that's possible because we're really buoyed by our mission to support artists and enrich the cultural life of the vineyard.
Yeah. Performance arts organizations have to plan well in advance in the best of times, right? But planning ahead in this midst of a pandemic is certainly a challenge. So what guided your approach as you thought about the 2021 spring and summer schedule for the yard?
Yeah, we went into this year saying, okay, if conditions do not improve, what can we do with our mission and safety as our priorities? Figuring that if they do improve, which hopefully they will, it will be easier to adjust in that direction versus the opposite. Another sort of guiding factor for us in shaping our program plan for this year is that we committed to rebooking the artists that we had to cancel in 2020. And we had a number of commitments prior to the pandemic to artists that we intend to honor this year and next year. So, we really came into this year more or less with a few exceptions, knowing which artists we were going to be working with. And I will say the winter and spring lineup for the yard that we just announced reflects two main priorities. One is to expand our family-friendly offerings to support youth and parents who, as we all know, have endured so much this pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then the other was to reactivate our artist residency program to support the development of dance works. We are firm believers at the Yard in the power of the arts to heal, and we really wanted to refocus on how do we safely get artists and dance companies back in the studio, making the work that is going to help us as a society, process what we've been through, rebound from it, and move forward.
Yeah. The art often brings performers back, and audiences can be a part of the creation and evolution of performances. Is this something that you'll be able to continue this season?
Yeah, we are very committed to ensuring that our audiences and our community get to experience the work of the artists that we work with. It's going to be different this year. We definitely will have a reduced number of opportunities, but we are going to be offering a combination of virtual events, both classes and performances and artist talks, and then in person. We experimented with this a little bit last year, having outdoor performances for very small audiences where folks can be socially distant and, of course, wearing masks. So we're looking forward to a number of those types of in-person opportunities this year. But it'll be a combo of online and in-person. I will say something that's so exciting about the former is that it has made it possible for folks who are not on the island to participate. And I think in particular, being on the vineyard, whether you're on Nantucket, the Cape, or anywhere else in the country, being in the virtual realm makes it possible for more folks to join.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about what's on the schedule this spring. It's part play, part performance, and it's participatory for families. So tell us more about the Gotta Bees.
Yeah. The Gotta Bees are just phenomenal, and some of our audience members know the Gotta Bees and Bonnie Duncan, who is sort of behind this company. They're a Boston-based group that blends puppetry, dance, and physical theater. They've been making family performances for almost a decade. And we are going to be offering a 30-minute screenplay every Saturday this month, so starting this weekend at 3 p.m. This screenplay program is such a great example of how artists have innovated in this time. Bonnie and the Gotta Bees developed this past summer. And it's basically a totally different experience from your typical Zoom experience, where instead of sitting and staring at the screen, you and your family will be actually participating in the story and sort of living and creating the story. So it's a blast. Mm. Bonnie, she herself admits that it's sometimes hard to describe until you've experienced it, but calls it nonstop interactive fun.
Right, we've got a clip from the Gotta Bees. Let's give a listen.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 3 of Try This at Home. I'm Bonnie from the Gotta Bees. We have been so excited to hear about you playing Ball of Energy with your family and also falling asleep dramatically on your family. And because of this week we have another favorite game to share with you. It's called Please No. Okay, so in order to play Please No, you need two or more people. One person's job is to say please. The other person's job is to respond with no. So right now, we're gonna have Dan and Adelaide show you how we do it.
Please?
No.
Please?
No.
Please?
No.
That was fantastic. Now I want you to think about, all of you at home, and Dan and Adelaide, how you can use your entire body to do this. You have your whole body to say, please, and your whole body to say, no. Whatever it is, no. Use your whole body. So let's try one more round with a little bit more.
Please.
No.
Please.
No.
Now, what we love about this game is that you can play it anywhere with anyone at any time.
And what you can't see in that clip are the different scenarios where it's kids and adults, kids and kids, adults and adults. They're all acting out the please and no, a call and response that's very familiar to most families.
Starting
next week is a two-week satellite residency with Everett Saunders and Marjana Forte Saunders, and they're developing a work title Prophet. What would you like us to know more about that, them?
Yeah, these are just two phenomenal artists. Marjani is a choreographer and dancer. Everett is a composer and musician. And they have a company called 7NMS. And again, an example of the ingenuity and resilience of artists. This duo piloted this program called Satellite Residencies, where, you know, national dance presenters and co-commissioners, including The Yard, are supporting the development of their new work, Prophet, from their home studio in Pasadena, California. So this is an opportunity, you know, they're out in California. They're going to be working on Prophet. And on Saturday, February 27th at 5 p.m. Eastern, our audiences will have the opportunity to jump online and get to know Marjani and Everett, sort of go behind the scenes into their residency and watch a sort of section of Prophet, which is, as we've sort of said, you know, in development. It's a work that explores the life journey of the MC or lyricist, alchemist, and minister of hip-hop culture. It's a work that blends literature, music, and dance. And as with all of Marjani and Everett's work, it is shaped by Black liberation movements.
So in a non-pandemic year, this would likely be a residency that you would host in person at The Yard, right? So you mentioned, because we have this pandemic, this does open up an opportunity to engage different artists because they can join virtually, right?
That's exactly right. And in The Yard's case, our facilities are actually not winterized, which is, of course, common of buildings on the island. And so we have been quite limited in terms of restricting our artist residencies to the summer months when we can be, you know, operating in our facilities. And, you know, the pandemic has created, and artists like Marjani and Everett have really paved the way for all of us in this field to be thinking outside the box about how we can be collaborating. So it's very exciting for The Yard to be participating in and presenting an artist residency in February. Hmm. That is new for us.
Yeah. And then in early March, The Yard hosts a remote residency with Music from the Soul, spelled S-O-L-E. Let's give a listen to a clip before we hear more about them. Thank you. All right, Chloe, tell us more about Music from the Soul.
Yeah, so the clip that you just heard comes from the company's bubble residency at Katzbahn through the Guggenheim's Works in Process program. It was performed on the Lincoln Center grounds. This is a company that's been to the Yard before that we simply can't get enough of. It is the brainchild of choreographer and tap dancer Leonardo Sandoval and composer and musician Gregory Richardson. And they fuse with their company tap dance and Afro-Brazilian rhythms and music, incorporating forms such as samba, hip-hop, jazz, house, and connecting or sort of highlighting connections between the Afro-diasporic urban dance here in the U.S. and in Brazil, where Leonardo is from. So they'll be in residence, as you said, for a week in March, working in their home community in New York, sponsored by The Yard, and they will be developing a piece called Partido, which they actually started at The Yard in 2019, and they will also be starting work on a new piece. We will be announcing information about a virtual workshop with the company at some point during that week, so folks can jump online and actually take a class with Leo and the group.
Then we have Latasha Barnes and Caleb, is it Teacher, who will be on the Vineyard in March for their residency. Tell us a little bit more about their collaboration.
Yeah, so this is our first in-person on-island artist residency of the year, and since the pandemic shut everything down. We designed this residency in partnership with Slough Farm Foundation and Katema, which, you know, to my earlier point about the Yard's campus not being winterized, we are lucky to be able to work with Slough, so that's where the artists will be staying and rehearsing. They will be joined by two culinary artists selected by Slough Farm, and then the Yard is bringing Latasha Barnes and Caleb Teicher. These artists are just more amazing artists. Latasha is a tradition bearer of Black social dance. She has a master's in ethnochoreology, Black studies and performance studies from NYU. Caleb is another example of somebody who's really melding forms, Lindy Hop, vernacular, jazz, musical theater, percussive dance. So it's a dynamic duo. They're going to be working on their own stuff and also working together. They're longtime collaborators. And there will be an outdoor performance, a couple outdoor performances for small audiences, socially distanced, during the residency at Slough Farm. So there'll be more information coming about times and tickets.
And we have a clip to share. This is Latasha and Caleb dancing in a performance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Sounds like that'll be a fun time having, and you're going to, as you said, have a way for audiences to see them in person.
Yeah, and I do want to clarify, that clip is Caleb on The Late Show, as you said, with Stephen Colbert, but with Regina Spektor.
Okay.
Not with Latasha Barnes. Okay. Yeah, just to give you a taste of sort of flavor and what he does, his magic.
Yeah, and we have one more performance to discuss, even though it's not scheduled until early May. We're bowled over by this music. But before we talk about them, let's give a listen to a clip from KQED Arts in San Francisco, where the group is based.
5, 6, 7, 8.
I started La Mezcla because I never saw someone who looked like me on a stage before, on a professional tap stage.
What has been the most exciting about working with Vanessa and the rest of the group, the work is so driven by intention. I have so much respect for her.
In La Mezcla, we approach tap dance as a dance of resistance, dance of survival. And we're trying to push how tap dance is seen. I was born and raised in a very Chicana family. My mother's family is from Veracruz, Mexico. My father is Navajo and Cherokee. I started dancing when I was really young. My dive into the history of tap dance, this connection to the African diaspora, came later.
When Black people, their drums were taken away, this is how they communicated, how they celebrated. Brown femmes partaking in this Black American tradition continues this legacy of resilience.
Making music with my feet always felt right in my body. I lived in Veracruz, Mexico for a couple of years where I studied on Jarocho Sapteado, which is traditional footwork from Veracruz, Mexico. Like tap, Son Jarocho is rooted in this element of call and response. In the community gathering called a fandango, everyone is a musician, everyone dances. And the son goes on as long as the participants go on. I picked up the rhythms fast and with a couple of friends started this thing called Sapatap. I would teach them some tap material. They would teach me Son Jarocho Sapteado. And this concept kind of clicked for me, this mixture. I decided that this is how I'm going to reflect my Mexican-American identity.
How can you not love tap? This sounds like such a wonderful blend of culture, rhythm, history, and music. Chloe, tell us what compelled you to bring their work to the Yard audience.
Yeah, this is a group that we're actually just getting to know. This is Vanessa Sanchez's La Mezcla from the Bay Area, and this is another example of how working remotely or in the virtual realm has allowed us to more easily collaborate with a group out in California. We are also just blown away by what this group is doing. They are grounded, as you heard, in Chicana, Latina, and indigenous traditions, and they have a really strong social justice mission in their art-making practice. So they're part of our trio of family programs for this winter and spring season, and they are going to be sharing with young folks and families some of their choreography. They're also going to get us all on our feet dancing with rhythmic movement activities that are really accessible to movers of all ages and abilities.
Yeah.
So again, that will be Saturday, May 8th at 3 p.m.
Now, performances like this can make us want to jump up and start dancing. And in the past, the Yard has offered dance and movement classes. Are there plans to offer those classes again, maybe later in the summer?
Yes, there are. And I should mention that the Yard's Director of Island Programs and Education, Jesse Keller Jason, is teaching online through the West Tisbury Library now. And our hope for this summer is a combination of outdoor classes for adults, dance classes, as well as some version of our Kids Do Dance summer program, which would also be outdoors. So we're working through those details, but we do intend to get everybody on their feet dancing this summer.
Yeah. Now, we've been fortunate to have access to technology through the pandemic that connects us and gives us access to virtual performances, but it's hard to compare being in person at a live performance, the music resonating in your chest, the energy of the performers and the audience. What are your hopes for in-person performances this summer at the Yard?
Yeah, it is incomparable. And we have plans to do some outdoor performances that will be, unless things change dramatically, for small audiences, socially distanced and masked. We did two of those last year, one with Slough Farm Foundation and one at the MV Museum. So we had a chance to sort of see how that would work, and we're looking forward to doing some more of that this year with the visiting artists who will be in residence at the Yard.
Chloe Jones is the executive director of the Yard on Martha's Vineyard. We'll post more information about the spring lineup of performances at the Yard on our website, capeandislands.org. Chloe Jones, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Coming up after break, we talk with the artistic director at Eventide Theater Company in Dennis. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing how artists and art organizations are getting creative to reach audiences during the pandemic. Joining us is Chris Edwards, Artistic Director at Eventide Theater Company in Dennis. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Mindy. Good morning.
Good morning. This past year has been a challenge for everyone, but it's also forced us to rethink what we do and how we do it. And I imagine that's been the case at Eventide Theater. How was your 2020 lineup impacted, and what were some of the innovative ways that the theater adapted to this past year?
Well, like most of the other arts organizations who you spoke with today and other theaters throughout the Cape, our originally planned 2020 season just went up in smoke. Absolutely had to table it, and we kept, you know, trying to be optimistic. But of course, the reality was we had to cancel things as we went along. And early on, Eventide realized that we needed to be nimble and we needed to be quick and agile. And we immediately, almost immediately, launched into virtual programming. We said, this is where people are going to find their artistic connections. We just realized how important it was, with everybody being isolated, that we needed to connect to them. We needed them to have a creative outlet for, we needed a creative outlet for our actors, and we needed a creative venue for the people who are our regular patrons and audience. We started out with a production of Touched by War, which was the winner of our Kaplan Award last year. And it was the first foray into a Zoom production where we had our entire cast on screen in a virtual way, and we patted ourselves on the back for our ingenuity, and now we look back at it, and with all the things that we've learned, we're like, wow, we could have done so much different. But it's been a learning process for us.
And yeah, for everyone.
It has been. And just the way the technology has changed, and just learning some of the simple little tricks that go with it. This summer, we launched a series of drop-in Shakespeares where we opened it up to anybody who wanted to read a Shakespeare play with us. They could log into Zoom, and we had a lot of fun, and people would come dressed in costumes, and we would read the plays from beginning to end. We launched a masterclass series. And then realizing that this wasn't going to be changing anytime soon, that's where our winter, our Playwrights Etc. Playwrights Lab came from. One of our generous donors, Michelle Clark, had this wonderful idea and helped us organize and put it together. And our lab director, Jim Daglish, and our artists in residence, Candace Perry, have been really guiding the Playwrights Etc. Lab, which is going to culminate in this winter showcase of original works this coming weekend, which we're very excited about.
And we have a clip from Grist from the Mill. Is there anything you want to tell us about it to set it up?
Only that the blurb that Candace has presented about this play is that it is it deals with couples therapy for spies. And I thought that was a really cute and clever idea. And we can set that up by saying that much and roll with that.
All right, let's take a listen.
Welcome, Agents Carling and Jasper. Oh, we seem to have a good audio. Is there a problem with your light?
No problem.
But you're both wearing sunglasses.
Comes with the job.
But you're not on duty.
But we're in bureau-mandated marital counseling.
I prefer marital therapy. My job is not to counsel nor give advice for the lovelorn.
Perfect. Can we get over with it?
My wife likes to get down to business.
And how do you feel about that, Sam?
Feel about what?
Your wife's compulsion for getting down to business. Does she rush you during sex?
Hey, no way.
Is she anxious to get it over with?
You also have a songwriting competition underway and even some songwriting workshops. Tell us a little bit about these opportunities.
Sure. So every year, Eventide Theater promotes a songwriting competition, inviting songwriters from throughout the region to submit songs of different genre types. And we're going to proceeding with that as well. We're currently accepting applications from songwriters. We have a youth segment, and really just about any sort of genre you can think of, gospel, cabaret, country, pop. We're welcoming submissions for folks. We're taking those digital submissions, and we are planning to move forward with this program, be it in person, which we'd like to do in the fall, or digitally. In fact, that's one of the things that Eventide is committing to with both our specific digital programming, with our virtual playhouse and the Eventide Tale short story series that we do every other weekend, and even our theatrical season this year. We are committing that we will produce the shows we are committing to produce. We're not going to do what we did last year, which is chase optimism and cancel shows. The shows we announce are the shows we'll produce. Now, how they're produced is in question. They may be in person. If they can't be in person in our theater, they'll be in person outdoors. If they can't be in person outdoors, they will be live streamed. But we will present this season to our audience to make sure that they are getting the arts that we're promising them.
And so what else does Eventide have on tap for our audience for this winter?
Well, this winter, we're going to continue our Eventide Tales series, which is a short story series read by local actors, some very familiar faces, and some folks who used to be Cape Cod natives, who through the beauty of Zoom we can reach back out to and draw these actors in from places like Florida and the Carolinas and even Italy to bring them back to our virtual stage. We're also relaunching our virtual playhouse, which every month we're going to be premiering a new full-length play, starting on March 6th with a play by Matt Cini called Cici. And that is something that you can kind of set your watch to. And these all premiere on Saturdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so early enough that it's not going to throw your evening out of whack, but not so early that you have to rearrange your day around it. And we're trying to set that up as sort of an appointment viewing for folks to tune in and pay attention to what we're doing. And we're also launching an actual season. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you talked about you're going to present the season. So looking ahead to the summer, have you put together some productions for the summer season?
We have. We actually are announcing our fall, our entire season. We're going to be launching in April a play that was written for the virtual stage. It'll be streamed episodically, and we're co-producing that with Kituit Center for the Arts, which we're very excited about that partnership.
Oh, fun.
It's a great play that has been written by the director of our playwrights lab, Jim Daglish, and it's called Trojan Woman, and it's an episodic series that'll be available streaming starting in mid-April. We are then going to be doing a virtual green screen streamed production of Twain by the Tale in late May, featuring Stephen Rourke, who is going to be directing and performing in it. And if you have never seen Stephen is the best Twain interpreter to come along since Hal Holbrook. He's brilliant.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and he's going to be
like
leading
fun.
An ensemble cast in that green screen show. And then we're going to return to main stage productions with The Last 5 Years in September, being directed by Steve Ross. And we're following that in October with a production of Ha by Rich Orloff, who is a playwright who we've worked with in the past. And it's going to be
three one-act plays. Yeah, We are going to post links with more information about offerings at Eventide Theater, including the showcase of new work created in the Playwrights Lab at our website, capeandislands.org. Chris Edwards, Artistic Director at Eventide Theater, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the season.
Thank you, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.